I would like today to present our new results on the evaluation of the initial condition for the perturbative fragmentation function at next to leading order, which in fact extends the perturbative fragmentation function formalism for a summation of next to leading logarithms. This is work done in collaboration with Kirill Melnikov, and we are both from the University of Hawaii. I'll try to give a self-contained presentation, although short. So I'll start with the physics motivation for such studies. Then I'll describe briefly the perturbative fragmentation function formalism, which is needed for this study. Then I'll describe the process-independent approach that we use for the derivation of the initial condition at order alpha squared. Then I'll present our results and discuss its properties, and at the end I'll discuss the various applications for our results, and in the end, conclusions. So let me discuss first the heavy, in general, heavy quark fragmentation. Let's Q denote some heavy quark, usually B or C, and let's consider the production of some Q-flavored hadron, which I denote with HQ, in a hard scattering process. An example would be B meson production in E plus E minus. Such a process is characterized by two very different scales. We are interested in experiments, process, when these scales are very different. Q is the typical hard scale for the process, and M is the mass of the heavy quark. Then from the factorization theorem, basically follows that the energy spectrum for this heavy for this meson, for example, or hadron in general, can be represented as a convolution. Here, Z denotes the energy of the observed hadron, which is properly introduced and normalized to 1. It is a convolution of pure perturbative piece, which describes the perturbative production of massive quark Q, and is convoluted with a non-perturbative function, which describes the transition heavy quark to heavy quark-flavored hadron, and is typically extracted experimentally, well, at the time being only experimentally, and describes that transition at scale set by the mass m of the heavy quark. Let's look closer at the perturbative part of that convolution. When Q is much larger than M, this function, this distribution, contains large logs, quasi-collinear logs, to all orders in the coupling constant. Or the bigger this difference between Q and M, the better the factorization theorem works. However, the larger these logs, so one must resume these logs, or at least classes of them, to all orders in the coupling constant. To do that, one can do the following trick. One can represent this perturbative quantity again as a convolution. Convolution of this quantity is the usual coefficient function from producing some part on A, and one sums over all possible partons that can be produced in this hard scattering reaction. And it's convoluted with some function again, D. Here D is the so-called perturbative fragmentation function. It's fragmentation because it satisfies the Digi-Lapp equation. It's a process-independent quantity. It is totally insensitive to the reaction, to the high energy scales. Q does not appear here. To be completed, of course, one has to give the initial condition that this function must satisfy. So what one does is one says that at some value of the factorization scale mu, say mu naught, this function is given by some quantity d in e for each of the channels. If one takes the initial scale mu naught to be of the order of the mass of the heavy quark, then this initial condition can be computed perturbatively because it cannot contain large logs. And one can represent it, for example, in perturbation series. In this case, these functions here, d1, d2, and so on, they are all of the order 1. I want to point that this, it will become evident in a little bit later, but this function, this term, for example, controls the leading logs. This one controls the next to leading logs. This one controls next to leading logs, and so on. These coefficients d1 here, they were computed first by Mel and Nasson in 91. What we have done now is we have evaluated these coefficients for all flavor of fermion-initiated contribution to this function here, and gluon-initiated one is in progress. The computation of this one is in progress. Now, let me explain how one computes this object, the initial condition. Let me remind you first that it is a process-independent quantity. It is, however, prescription-dependent. The first approach that one may take is that the initial condition can be extracted from any particular process from the following relation. Here, to the left-hand side, we have here to the left-hand side, we have a fixed order result for the distribution of heavy quark evaluated to some fixed order in perturbation theory. Here the same quantity but evaluated for a massless quark, and it contains collinear divergences, of course. They are subtracted in some scheme. I'll use always MS bar scheme. This, in fact, the choice of the scheme for the subtraction of the collinear divergences gives the prescription dependence that I said mentioned. I will always assume MS bar scheme. So if one computes this quantity and this quantity separately, then one can extract the initial condition. However, such derivation is impractical beyond next to leading order for obvious reasons. Let me remark also that if the initial condition is known, then one can obtain the fixed order distribution for massive particle from the massless distribution, which is much easier to compute, of course, up to power corrections of the mass of the heavy quark, which are negligible for many processes. The second approach is basically a process-independent derivation of the initial condition. It must be possible since the initial condition itself is a process-independent quantity. Such an approach has been applied previously to next to leading order by Kellen-Warren and Kachari and Catani. So let me briefly say what is the essence of this method. From the factorization of short and long distance physics, one can write the distribution for a massive particle or for a massless particle in this form. Here, this quantity represents this part of the reaction where transverse momentum, large transverse momentum, is emitted, much larger than the mass of the heavy quark, and therefore it is insensitive to the low energy behavior. And for that reason, this factor is the same both in the case of massive and massless quark. And then we have separate second factor here and here, which describes only the low energy, the radiation of low transverse momentum, which is comparable to the mass of the quark. It is very sensitive already to the mass, so it's a different function for the case of massive and massless quark. This function here is finite as long as the mass is positive. The case of massless production, it would be zero, so we keep it by working in D dimension, and it is related to the usual coefficient function this way. Now one can combine all previous results, and then one gets this relation. There are some flavor indices here which I didn't write for short. Here we see that we have four factors which are all process independent. This one is known. Therefore, if we compute this one and this one, we can obtain the initial condition. How one can do that? Now, let's first recall that these factors both describe radiation of transverse energy, low transfer energy of the order of the mass of the heavy quark. Therefore, in the limit of small transverse momentum, the collinear kinematics really dominates. What we need to study then is the behavior of some arbitrary process where heavy quark is produced. I always assume that the heavy quark that is observed, its momentum is denoted by Q1 in the kinematical region. Now, let's be some arbitrary process, and in this process we have produce some particle with momenta k1, kn. We are not interested in them really, and here these three momenta are collinear. This momentum p is some Hart momentum which is on shell. The difference between these three and this one is of the order of the transverse momentum. We work in physical gauge, given by some light-like vector, set by some light-like vector n mu. In such case, no contribution from interference diagrams will appear, and therefore, as a result, the collinear splitting effectively decouples from the rest of the process. To derive these functions, we also use the factorizations of the matrix element and the phase space in the collinear limit. This is also well known. For example, I skipped several technical points here, but the result is known. The matrix element squared for production of all these particles can be represented as sum of all these three particles replaced by one on-shell hard particle times some scalar function. I'll describe it later. And the phase space also factorizes in a similar way. This is the phase space for these hard particles, some collinear factor which involves integration over the momenta of the unobserved collinear particles. And therefore, these functions that we need can be obtained from integration of this factor W over the momenta of these unobserved particles. Now, let me describe the evaluation of this function W. We are interested in the spin average case. Then for final state quark Q with some momentum Q1 and decaying fermion of any flavor, as I said, this is what we have calculated so far. This function W has this form. Here V is a matrix in the spinor indexes, and it is obtained from the squaring of the following three types of diagrams evaluated in a physical gauge. This one separately, this one, and then we add their contributions. Now, for example, this one, what does it represent? It's a little bit, this point here stays to denote the, I want to stress on the fact that this is decay of an off-shell particle, and this is really a propagator for this particle. These three particles are on-shell though. So what one has to do, take this, square it, and then trace it this way to obtain the contribution to this function W. The similar one, consider the one loop or the two loop virtual corrections to the corresponding processes. These functions W are often referred to as splitting functions. For the three-level zero mass case, they were derived previously by Campbell and Glover and Catani and Grazzini. We generalized their results in order to include the effect of the mass of the heavy quark. I want to stress that in this calculation, there is no approximation. The mass is exactly kept everywhere. It's important. Where this operator comes from, this projector? First, N is the light-like gauge vector, which I mentioned. It also enters the Sudakov parametrization. And this projector extracts the leading behavior of the tensor V in the collinear limit. And the form of this projector falls from power counting argument in the collinear limit. To obtain these functions, one has to iterate W over the momentum, as I already said, of the collinear particles. In the three-level case, the result takes this form. Here are the two phase space for on-shell particles with the mass m or zero, depends on their type. This is some scalar part, and this basically it tells us what is z, this constraint. Now, this thing I want to emphasize, this means that the integration over the transverse momentum of the real emitted collinear particles must be kept below the factorization scale mu naught. In the one loop case, we have one real and one virtual emission header in here. In the two loop case, the result is proportional to delta function 1 minus z. The epsilon-dependent constant, which multiplies the delta function, can be fixed from the fermion number conservation condition, which to that order takes this form. We indeed have used this condition at order alpha s square, but also as a check, we have evaluated the pure virtual contributions at order alpha s. Several practical issues in the evaluation of these functions. First, in the case, the massless case, the function DL has two indices, really, that go over all possible flavors, and one has many functions to evaluate. Second, there is asymmetric real and virtual integrations because of this restriction on the size of the transverse momentum of the real particles. Infinity here really means that the phase space is the usual one, not restricted. So there is this asymmetry. One can solve though both these problems if one extends to infinity the upper limit of the integration over the transverse momentum. This can be done. What one gains from this, in fact, a lot, because first this function becomes takes this simple form to our order in alpha epsilon. There is nothing to really compute here. The reason for this is that in the massless case, all integrals become scaleless and vanish. Now there is a complete symmetry between real and virtual integration. Therefore, one can evaluate them simultaneously, and I'm pretty sure that everybody here now realizes how. The final working expressions for the initial conditions are given by this equation. Essentially, this is the function that has to be calculated. It contains mass logs and also 1 over epsilon poles. They have to be cancelled by the usual collinear countant terms. This is the final result. This is the form for the contribution from the pure real case, the real virtual case. Integration over the two real momenta, integration over real and virtual momenta. These are the various components of the initial condition that we have to consider. First, the heavy quark initiated one. There are three different contributions: two gluon pair emission, light quark pair emission, and heavy quark pair emission. For the anti-heavy quark initiated condition, which first show up in this order, there is again heavy pair emission, and this is also new at order alpha s square. It is again pair emission, and this one is in progress. Basically, this process one has to consider. Of course, one also has to consider virtual corrections to this process Q to QQG, and also here the gluon splitting to QQ bar. Now the evaluation of the integrals that appear there, what we do is we evaluate first separately the contribution with different masses in the final state. Then within each of these groups we apply the IBP identity, integration by parts identities. Afterwards we algebraically reduce the contributions from all diagrams. The total is about 20 master integrals that we have to evaluate. The master integrals contain single scale, the mass, and are functions of a single variable z. We also rederive the known results to order at order alpha alpha s to order epsilon, which is needed to perform the usual the ultraviolet renormalization, which itself is performed in the usual way, and finally we perform the collinear subtraction. The general form of the result is this one. It can be, as I mentioned in the very beginning, decomposed in powers of the strong coupling constant evaluated at the scale mu naught. Since the perturbative fragmentation function is a solution to the Digiwap equation, therefore the general form of the logarithmic terms, the mass log terms, is known. One can determine it at order alpha square. It has this form. These are the various splitting functions and their convolutions. These functions C1 and C2 that appear here, C2 and C1 here and here, these are, in essence, integration constants for the Digiwap equation. They cannot be determined, inferred from the equation, and must be evaluated explicitly. Now, one may say why a constant is important since we need logs, if one iterates this at the next level, this will pick up log and so on. For example, one can see here what happens to the constant, which is from at order alpha s, picks already a log. Before I present our result at order alpha square, let me first remind the next two leading order results at order alpha s. This is the quark initiated contribution. We saw it also in the previous talk. This is the gluon initiated contribution. All other contributions vanish. This is the result for the light quark or anti-quark initiated fragmentation process. The two contributions, in fact, coincide, and this is the complete expression. These are the terms with log square and log first power, and this is the constant piece, which is the non-trivial, contains the non-trivial information. This contribution vanishes in the limit z1. This is the the result for the heavy anti-quark initiated process. It has more complicated structure. There are, in fact, two independent functions that describe the result. This is the first one. This is the dependence on mass logs in this term. This is the constant term in this function only. And this is the second function. I have included also the mass logs here. This is the constant. This function also has the property that it vanishes in the z1 limit. Now, this is the most complicated contribution, heavy quark initiated process. There are four different Skauer contributions split into the various core factors. Here we introduced NL, which is the number of light flavors. This contribution, which is the simplest one, takes this form. This is only the constant piece. Now we see it has not simple behavior in the points n to 1, as is expected. Now this is the most complicated contribution. This is the constant term in the CF square piece. The other two I'm not going to show. They're comparable in length to this one, maybe a little bit smaller. Few comments on the properties of this result. It satisfies the fermion number conservation condition, although that's not that surprising because this is true by construction. I want to point out, though, that these terms are not separately integrable now. There are terms of this type that are present, however, they cancel in the difference. The non-singlet term, which is proportional to the number of flavor, exactly coincides with the known results from the large beta naught limit. From a paper by Cacciari and Gardi last year. Then the limit Z1. Our result reproduces the next to leading logarithmic soft logs of this type for k equal 3, 2, and 1 take at scale mu equals mu naught from the result for the Solgon-Resum initial condition due to Cacciari and Catani. Our result can be used to extract a constant denoted in that paper by H2, which is needed in order to promote this result to next to leading logarithmic accuracy. Let me say a few words about the applications of our result, and again remind that it's a universal result. First, application to fixed order calculations. Again, one can compute spectra of massive fermions at next to leading order up to terms of this type, power corrections, from massless calculations, which is a great simplification beyond next to leading order. Examples are B spectrum in top decay. Currently, it's known at next to leading order. It's known that the these power corrections are completely negligible in the spectrum. And this is, for example, important result for precise top mass determination. Also, one can study this way in QED, electron spectrum in mu decay. All order resummations of such logs with NNL next to leading logarithmic accuracy. Of course, for that one needs also the time-like splitting functions to the same accuracy. The space-like we know are already available, so that hopefully will be soon. Then this will be particularly relevant for the extraction of non-perturbative fragmentation functions, like, for example, describing the transition B quark to B mesons, for example, for bottom or also charm. I want just to remind the recent reanalysis of the B production at the Tevatron and the importance of this non-perturbative component to the result. Also, our result will help to significantly, in fact, reduce the theoretical uncertainty in the extraction of this non-perturbative fragmentation component. And here are my conclusions. What we have done is we have calculated all fermion-initiated components of the initial condition for the perturbative fragmentation function at order alpha square, or NNLO, thus extending the perturbative fragmentation function formalism to next to leading logarithmic level. We followed a process-independent approach for the computation of the initial condition, which exploits the universal behavior of the collinear radiation. To evaluate the two-loop integrals, we made use of hot techniques for multi-loop calculations, integration by parts, reduction to master integrals, and their solving. I also discussed the general properties of our results, as well as checks with the partial results available in the literature. I also mentioned some of the possible applications for our results, like fixed order spectra for heavy particles from pure massless calculations, and of course the summation of quasicollinear logs with NNL accuracy, and accurate extraction of the non-perturbative fragmentation function from data. Thank you.
Yes, you used a physical gauge, A dot N equals zero was in light lag. Space-like? Light-like?
Yes.
And in such a gauge, you typically get integral dx over x from 0 to 1, and there's divergences which hopefully cancels. Was there any problem there?
No, we didn't have any problem with this because the way we... to evaluate... In fact, the only tricky place was the evaluation of the filter normalization constants, which we did by explicitly evaluating, inserting self-energy corrections to the external legs. And that was actually very easy to do, so we didn't have any problem.
Instead of directly calculating these results from the graphs, could you just take the solution of the Dirac equation in the form of the exponent using the known two-loop splitting functions and expand it up to order alpha squared and to the leading logs? Will it be the same or there will be a difference?
If one does that, it one gets exactly this thing. Let me show it again. So if one does what you suggest, this is what one gets. In terms of this and this, and these are two unknown constants. You cannot determine them this way.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.